We're back from recess, and we're working with Bob Atchley in a planning and zoning work session for a staff departmental update. Bob?
Okay. Well, first off, I wanted to let you know that we have had a brief opportunity. I've had a brief opportunity to meet with Mr. Erickson. We haven't had an opportunity to go through everything in a great deal of detail at this point. But Mr. Erickson and I did both attend the Board of Aldermen meeting at the City of Branson. It's my understanding that they also have voted to proceed with the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program. One of the things they really tried to go through, and I'll be honest, I was going to contact them again just to confirm everything, but it is my understanding in speaking with SEMA that we do have an application deadline at this point. Now, the deadline is just strictly for the submission of a notice of interest, and so it's my understanding that this notice of interest form, I've got it printed out here, it's basically a two-page form. But that form has to be submitted to them by August 17th.
With parcel numbers or just overall very vague, we're interested?
It looks like this is fairly broad-based, fairly vague, just indicating interest. Now, they have indicated to me that there's supposed to be some preliminary cost estimate, and that's the big thing that concerns me. Is at this point, it's still been somewhat of a moving target as to how many folks are interested in the buyout program. As of right now, we've got 9 homes that we found to be substantially damaged. Of the 9 homes, I've got eight of those property owners that are interested in the buyout. I've got one property owner that is elevating his structure. He's putting it up on poles or stilts. Where I need to do a little bit more work is on the property owners that have not been substantially damaged. I have contact information for a percentage of these folks, but for a percentage of these folks, when we've gone out and made these assessments, we've just talked to people that were actually doing some of the work on site, actually cleaning up and some of these sites. And so I really need to find out, that's one of the next things I've got to hammer down, is exactly how many people, if there's an interest in applying both for substantially damaged properties and non-substantially damaged properties. I'm not certain what that number is at this point, how many of those folks for sure are interested.
The one home that's substantially damaged that the individual feels they're going to put on stealth, is that in the floodway?
It actually is.
If it's in the floodway, do they have the option? I thought that had to be mandatory that they be bought out and that they couldn't rebuild.
Go ahead.
What we discovered, and there was kind of some misinformation initially, but what we've discovered is they do have to elevate a foot above that base flood elevation. And then they're supposed to actually also complete a no-rise certificate. They're supposed to have an engineer fill out what's called a no-rise certificate, basically stating that the floodwaters wouldn't rise by more than a foot because of this. And I actually got this clarified a little bit. I talked to SEMA, the representatives with SEMA, and they had indicated that we could actually look at requiring a no-rise certificate, but not necessarily the calculations, because basically it was his opinion that this is a structure that's in the floodplain now. It's a structure that's still going to be in the flood or the floodway after it's put up on stilts. But he just felt like it was a good idea to have documentation from an engineer still stating that it wasn't going to cause the waters to rise, basically. But he felt pretty confident that it would not, just because
I can't imagine one house down there is going to cause flood
exactly.
water.
Exactly.
That's just incomprehensible.
He will have to provide us an elevation certificate. He'll have to fill out a floodplain development permit, and he'll have to have an engineer complete a no-rise certificate. He's kind of indicated that he's gotten preliminary estimates somewhere in the $40,000 range, and he's actually eligible for $30,000 through this increased cost of compliance. And so the majority of this is actually going to be funded through his insurance. But he is the only one that's indicated a wish to rebuild. Really, everyone else that was substantially damaged has indicated a wish to be bought out. I do have two properties, just to bring this up. We sent out a preliminary letter to all the property owners that were damaged, basically indicating whether or not we felt that they were either substantially damaged or not substantially damaged, and we gave them the ability to basically protest that or appeal that. And I do have two property owners that are still in the process of providing us additional documentation. They were initially found to not be substantially damaged. They feel like they were. And so they both stated that they're going to provide additional documentation indicating that they were substantially damaged.
And is the reason you think that they want to do that is because they think that we may only look at substantially damaged homes and they want to be bought out?
That's my understanding, is they think that that greatly improves their odds of being bought out. Right or wrong, I've tried to be very forthcoming with information. I've really tried to indicate to these folks that it is possible to have a buyout of properties that aren't substantially damaged, but if we look at that buyout, that we have to conduct a cost-benefit analysis, and that, of course, that is waived can be waived for properties that are substantially damaged.
You had mentioned that Branson had voted to do the hazard mitigation grant program, so
yes.
They're going into that. For X number of homes, did they choose to only look at substantially damaged homes?
They did, but they've got a different scenario. They've kind of indicated that they had a total of 49 houses that were impacted. We came out with a total of 39 properties. The big difference is they have a large number of them that are not primary residences. And so a lot of their residences wouldn't qualify. And so they've actually narrowed theirs preliminarily down to 7. So and of the 7, they're stating that all 7 of those are substantially damaged. In our case, my feel is that there are 8 that are interested that are substantially damaged. But my feel is that the number of people that are interested is much higher than that. I think it's probably at least twice that amount, if not more.
Couple points. If this county commission chooses to, which we basically have already stated we were going to do, is to make application through the grant program on behalf of those homes that fall within the county. But if we qualify that is substantially damaged, then there is no benefits cost analysis that has to be done, correct?
That's correct.
And if, in fact, we include non-substantially damaged homes, there is a threshold. Then we have to have the benefits cost analysis.
You're correct.
I don't have a clue what's involved in that or how expensive it is, but I would like to have some information on that. But let me take that one step further, and then
okay.
I'll let you come back to that. The more houses that are non-substantially damaged to a degree of, say, 10% or 15%, if they want to get bought out, and they are combined with those houses that are substantially damaged, then it would lower the threshold.
You're
and
correct.
The possibility is that none would be eligible for the 75% buyout. Is that theoretically possible?
It is possible. The other thing that was actually indicated, and this would not be an easy decision, I mean, being completely straightforward, is the FEMA and SEMA representatives had indicated that it's likely going to be possible if we looked at extending the buyout to both substantially and non-substantially damaged properties, that we might have to in some way rank these properties, because it could be that you're exactly correct. We might reach a threshold where we don't hit that minimum one-to-one ratio that's required to approve the grant program.
So let's say that there are theoretically 15 homes that are non-substantially damaged that would like to be bought out.
Yes.
And the number comes back if we don't reach the threshold that's needed. Then this commission or you or somebody is going to have to pick which homes are not going to be available for the buyout of those 15.
You're correct.
And if they're already prioritized, you're saying obviously that would simplify the process in the long run. We get rid of 15, 14, 13, 12 until you hit. And they allow you to do that, to pick homes out?
That was my understanding, is that we would likely have to do that at the front end. Prior, now I don't know that we have to do that prior to sending in a notice of interest.
Prior to August 17th.
But I think there's a high, I think it's likely that we have to do that prior to sending in the actual application. Because at this point they've just established a deadline, from my understanding, just for this notice of interest.
Is it request individual number of homes on it, or an amount?
That's what concerns me. It really actually asks for a dollar amount, and it's asking for the total project cost for an estimate.
So theoretically, again, and I apologize for doing this, we could find an amount that covered everyone, place that in, and then fine-tune that later, potentially or possibly?
That was my understanding, and it was actually my understanding as well, just to give you an example, and I'm just throwing numbers at. I mean, I'm not looking at any, but if we had 15 properties that ended up being interested in this buyout program, if we went completely through the process and then two of those property owners decided for whatever reason that they weren't interested, they would have the ability to back out. Since it's strictly a voluntary program, it was my understanding that those monies would actually go back into the larger fund for the state of Missouri, where people could potentially reapply for those funds, or that those funds would be available. I think the biggest thing they've expressed to me, and maybe more so non-publicly, is that we don't undershoot. I think they feel like if you overshoot, it's my understanding that they're basically drawing down on this amount of money you get every time, you know, you're submitting. I'm forgetting my terminology, but basically you're submitting bills to them and drawing down on this amount of money. But that was the biggest thing, is they've really indicated over and over again not to undershoot, or I think we actually would have to amend our application and seek additional funds.
Let me ask probably a more pertinent question for the homeowner. Are they required, are we required somewhere along the line to commit from some source the 25%? And is that commitment merely a commitment in writing that property owners are going to put up 25%? We're going to pursue community development block grants to cover the 25%, or combination, or whatever we put in. Is that all that's required, or is there actually a requirement that dollars be set aside for that 25%?
Now, correct me if I'm wrong on this, because I don't want to misspeak. But it was my understanding that in signing the actual application, that we're indicating that that the county would be indicating in some way at the end of this program that the 25% would be available in some way, that whether it be through community development block grants or through actual county funds. Now this was one thing, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but that I took away from the City of Branson's meeting was I had kind of understood that the City of Branson was not going to look at actually requiring escrow funds at the front end, but that they were looking at, first of all, they were going to try to investigate every source they could as far as community development block grants and everything they could. But it was my understanding that potentially, in a worst-case scenario, that the applicants, that the property owners could look at receiving 75% at the end of this thing. But then there's still, I think my main concern there is there's also the cost of demolition, the appraisal, and some of those costs as well.
Can I just chime in for 1 second there? From what I understand from talking to the Branson's Hollister on Saturday, they are not requiring escrow accounts. Because the program is voluntarily, they remember Sheila in our presentation, Huddleston, saying that since it's voluntary, that at any time the homeowner can withdraw from the process.
Exactly.
Therefore, not requiring anything more than the indication that they have the 25%. On a side conversation I had with one of the people, and I won't tell you who it was, they said they've gone up to closing, down to closing at times when they're doing the buyouts in other parts of the state, and went into a bank and borrowed on the payout of the 75%, and so did a 24-hour loan with the lien release at sign of closing.
Okay.
So they just did the magical exchange of checks. So they've done multiple ways, but there's multiple ways to do it, but no one is going to be, from what they told me, Ziegenfuss and or Mayor, they were not going to require escrow accounts.
That was my understanding as well. One other thing I wanted to bring up, and this was, I've left her a message, but I haven't had an opportunity to speak with her yet, but it's my understanding that the Southwest Missouri Advisory Council of Governments, that they actually received some funds. Now, I don't know what amount of money we're looking at, but supposedly they've already received a certain amount of funding through the CDBG grants specifically for flood hazard mitigation. Now, I don't know if those funds would just potentially allow for them to help with the writing of some of these grants, but it's my understanding that they already have some of these grant funds, and that potentially these would be funds that might be utilized to help both the county and the cities within the county to potentially write these grants. one of the questions I did ask this morning as well, I contacted SEMA this morning, and it is my understanding, I wanted them to clarify that if we put on a staff member to administer these grants, that could be written into the grant as well. And it was my understanding, I've not gotten written confirmation of that, but verbally it was my understanding that this grant amount could include an amount for a project manager. And so if that person was looked at upon as the project manager, we would just have to have documentation as to the amount of time they spent on it, what amount of pay scale, and then what their benefits were and that type of thing. But it does sound like that is actually something that could be paid for out of the grant as well.
Is that something that's added to each individual 75-25, or is that separated? Which also brings me to the point, are the appraisals separated, or is that tacked on to the 75-25? Other costs that are associated with this, like demolition, is that tacked on to the 75-25?
I know that is.
It is, but it's all on the everything's on the individual application, because we're doing individual applications is what we're doing.
And here's...
Wait, just a minute. Each home would be an individual application?
Now, I've always understood
it
that
was
it's...
in mass.
That it's, yeah, just one application.
I'm sorry, one application, but you've got to take the number of properties, and you still got to do an individual sub-application for each property, because you still got to do the benefit and cost analysis.
On the individual property.
Yeah, I mean, you still got to do an individual worksheet, a worksheet is a very simplistic way of saying a multiple-page document on each property. So you would probably, what I'm hearing is that you could spread those project management fees across all the properties.
And that's one thing, and that's one thing I've gotten further clarified a little bit as far as the cost benefit analysis. If the county were to look at properties both substantially damaged and not substantially damaged, it's my understanding that we look at this, we would have to run this computer program for this as one project or one group. And so kind of what you were saying earlier, if we had a fairly large number that are substantially damaged, it's going to help bring up our ratio, basically. Now, one thing I have been able to do, I did print out, they've got a hazard mitigation assistance unified guidance document, and it's a 168-page document that's basically supposed to assist you in writing these grants. And then I also printed out the guidance document for the benefit.
So the instructions are 168 pages.
Exactly. The instructions
can't wait to see the grant.
Are 168 pages. The instructions for the benefit cost analysis are about 101 pages, and I've printed those as well. It is a downloadable program. I found the site where you can download or upload this to your computer. They even told me today they're planning to have some training sessions on this, but I think they're going to be held this next month.
So I don't have to bring in a CPA or an appraiser to do the benefits cost analysis or cost benefits analysis, which is...
Well, I really feel like it's my understanding, and I haven't read this, I'll be honest, I haven't made it through this whole document, but it's my understanding that some of the things we would have to have is we would have to have basically an appraised value on each structure. I know we would actually have to have the elevation, the floor elevation of each structure, so that bottom floor elevation. Now, one of the things we did discuss early on in some of these meetings was the possibility of getting that elevation information
from our road and bridge department.
Yeah, from our road and bridge department instead of having to hire a surveyor.
Because we have all that equipment.
And it was my understanding from what she told us that we could.
Yeah, she said we could. We could charge his time against it.
Yeah, that was my understanding. And then we would also need to know the base flood elevation, but that's actually on the maps. I mean, that's something pretty easy to...
Here's where I was going with the questioning about the additional expenses for the appraisal, for shooting the elevations, for all the different things that will be lumped in. If, in fact, they are tacked on to the individual 75-25, my fear is that 25% has substantially grown, so the homeowner is not actually potentially going to get 75% back on what the appraised value of that home might be. Is that a possibility?
Doesn't that go, all this stuff go toward the 25%?
Yes, it does.
Actually, we're helping. All this goes toward the 25%.
Everything goes towards the 25%.
Correct.
That was my understanding.
Well, that's way better than
so,
I was thinking.
Yeah. So if the appraisal... And that was my understanding. That's one thing I've wanted to clarify a little bit. But my understanding was that if the appraisal was paid for at the front end, for instance, that would be monies that would be going toward the 25%.
Correct.
Well, and appraisal paid by who? Let's ask that.
Well, and
too.
Exactly, and that's
whoever pays for it goes toward the 25%. Let's put it that way.
And that's my understanding as well.
Bob, I would be very interested to know how many property owners out there, particularly that are not substantially damaged,
exactly,
are going to be willing, if in fact we vote to go that way, and I'm not convinced that we should, will want to put those dollars that are a portion of the 25% up. Not asking to put 25% of the total value of the appraised home in an escrow account, but to cover expenses, because this does exist. If we get to a point and a homeowner goes, I'm not going forward, and they didn't put any share, they didn't have any skin in the game, if you will, as far as the monies that were invested in the 25%, who gets stuck with that bill at the end of the day? It's either the county or the city, is my guess, if they put up the money.
You're saying, like the survey.
I'm talking about for the appraisals. I'm talking
the appraisal. If at this
the
point,
benefits cost analysis.
Well, there's not. It's only for the non-substantial damage because you don't do a BCA on substantial damage property. So you're only talking.
You will if you combine the two.
But you still all of them have to be done, or just only the two properties that have substantially damaged.
Well, I was told all of them.
Yeah. Now the way I understand it now, and I've talked to Sheila a little bit more about this. If we had eight that were substantially damaged and we had eight that were not substantially damaged, that we would have to do a cost-benefit analysis on the full 16, and we would have to show that those 16 properties were going to come out at this one-to-one ratio.
So let me ask you this question different. How many, okay, that's new information. I hadn't heard that one yet. So with the ones that are not substantially damaged, do we have that list that are interested? Are you just talking about the two that are arguing that they are substantially damaged, or are there more than two?
Well, the problem I've got of the folks that are not substantially damaged, I've still got a pretty good percentage that are in question, that basically they haven't gotten back with me to let me know one way or the other.
Then maybe we make them put up the money for any out-of-pocket expenses. Not so much Ron's time or your time or Randy's time doing GPS, you know, but if there's any cost cash out of pocket, maybe they have to front that on the non-substantially damaged.
Yeah.
My concern, though, if we've got these 8 or 10 or 15 properties that are substantially damaged and we've got two that aren't, and those two happen to make the whole thing not a one-to-one ratio, and we throw them out, it'd be nice to know that before they spend any money on the appraisals and all that.
I agree with you.
Is there a way to speed that process up? I mean, BCA is really what we got to do quickly.
My understanding and that's the thing that's so tough with this, but it's my understanding to do the BCA, we pretty well have to have an appraisal completed on each one. So it's almost a little bit of a catch-22 situation. Because I think that's one of the components that has to go into this.
It's cleanest to do substantially damaged properties.
Only.
It's cleanest it's just the cleanest way to go about it. The decision we have to make is whether or not that's what we want to do, because there are a number of people that may be close. A couple that you said are having additional appraisals done because they want to fall in that category.
Can I ask as separate as
many?
The substantial damaged application that we're going to do. Let's say, can you do more than one application? Can Taney County do more than one application? Can we do an application for substantially damaged and keep that separate from the non-substantial damage?
Well, if you do the non-substantial damage, they're not going to reach the threshold to get the grant. If they're not going to get any money.
That's really the primary concern.
Even if they've been damaged over the last 10 years of every flood? I mean, they're talking about reoccurring damages. The BCA is based off of future expenses of future flooding is how you do the BCA.
There's another, the frequent flooding, we could approach it from that perspective, which is another type of grant, correct?
Yes.
That's the
repetitive
flood. Loss grant.
And with that one, it pays 100%, but the problem we've got there is there's a pool of $10 million
nationwide,
and then it's a competitive grant.
But if we're going to apply for grants and we choose to do that, we could apply for all of them.
Sure.
That's possible. So any property owner could apply for however many options are available out there.
Now, this is one thing that was brought up in the Branson meeting, excuse me, as well as it is my understanding that if we applied for a grant for for a certain property under one grant fund, that same property couldn't appear on two. You know, we couldn't apply for a hazard mitigation grant for them at the same time that we applied for a repetitive flood loss, is my understanding, that we could only apply for one or the other, excuse me.
That we could only apply for one or the other?
Yes. And so I don't think we could apply. Thank you. I apologize. I've been battling a cold. But it was my understanding that we could not apply. So if we had one property that we couldn't apply for both grant programs for the same property at the same time.
Back to Jim's question about two applications, one for substantial and one for non-substantial. I don't believe, because all non-substantials are below 50%, that there's any way they could reach that threshold to be eligible for the 75%.
Right.
I mean, I don't think there's a zero chance.
They have to have
the substantial damage, raise them up enough to make them eligible.
Okay, so we're talking a formula type.
I
would think that Sheila could help you work with some sort of formula to say, you can take, with every 10 houses, you can take one non-substantial or something like that. I mean, the reality is we can't have 10 substantially and 10 non-substantially and think we're going to maintain a one-to-one ratio. That's not going to happen.
It just doesn't figure that way.
I think, from what little I understand about it, I think this benefit-cost analysis is pretty complex, too. I think somehow it actually takes into account the elevation of each of the homes, the bottom floor, and the base flood elevation, just for an example. I don't know how I'm not familiar enough with it yet to know exactly how it calculates, you know, how all this is calculated.
Jim, I think that your comment would work if you had a substantially damaged home that was at 75 or 80%, and you had a home that was at 45 or 49%, but we've got homes that are 10% or 15% that are going to be paired with homes that are 52%. That's not going to fall.
Well, then let's do this. When you did your substantial assessment, did you rank them percent wise how close they were?
We actually did.
Okay,
and so
if you could find a property that's 40% or more, 40 to 50%, could you tell me how many of those properties there are?
I could. I don't have that number, but I could come up with it pretty quickly.
Well, I was just thinking, we really should narrow down this, because the reality is, if it's 10% damage or 20% damage, that's going to skew everything. But if it's in that 40 percentile, there may be a chance there be a few of those that probably need to be considered, and it wouldn't throw that ratio over to a point where we couldn't get anything accomplished.
Being really frank at the front end, too, the majority of these probably fall that are non-substantial, probably fall between about 30-35% and 50%. So most of these, even if they weren't substantial, they were really close. We had some that fell out at 48 or 49%.
What I think is going to be in the best interest of everyone is to touch base again with all of these property owners.
Oh, exactly.
With the different facts that we do have and see how interested they are. It's time sensitive from the perspective we've got to do number one.
Exactly.
And I think that we should also be working on what that valuation is so that we can establish that. I don't care if we establish it for all of them.
Mm-hmm.
The higher, the better, quite frankly, because apparently we can go down. You don't want to go up, as you stated.
That's my understanding.
And they're gonna factor that in. They're going to plug it into whatever formula they're using with everybody else. And
well,
for that form, I'm saying.
Right.
Include them all.
Is this the process you're looking at to apply for the grant? Because I'm not, as I understood what you said there earlier, and Jim was pitching in about the city of Branson and them taking on and not requesting that they have any escrow account money.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're saying?
That's what they said.
Okay. The city of Branson at that point, according to what Seema said, are taking on the liability of paying the full amount. If those persons that own homes do not have money available or back out at the last minute or decide that they don't want to, the city of Branson is responsible for the funds, the same way we are.
Well, here's my thought on that. I don't think that's the case. If it's applied for properly, that the commitment is coming from the individual property owner, if he didn't come up with the 25%, he didn't get the 75%. Now, I may be wrong, but that's how I understand it.
There's two things that I had heard, and I don't know which one they finalized on, but I believe, Ron, you're right, that you specify in the application where the 25% coming from. Is it from the entity applying, or is it the individual? The other thing is I thought I heard that Branson was requiring a letter basically committing to the 25%. So over and above the application, they're having a letter of commitment, too, that clearly specifies the only way this is happening is if you're putting up the 25%. So, I mean, that's because we can withdraw from the application at any time also because it's a voluntary process. But that's how I understood that you, in the application, you can, like Ron was saying, specify who is putting up that and where that money's coming from.
Jim, go ahead.
Because there are applications that are solely based, if I'm not mistaken, and talking to different entities out there, this is going to be funded through Community Development Block Grant. They hadn't even applied for the Community Development Block Grant when they made that comment. And in fact, if it doesn't come in, they're not going to get the 75% because they don't have the 25%.
Correct.
And the entity, the city or the county, wasn't on the hook because they failed to get the grant.
That's the term that they used that bothered me.
Okay.
Was on the hook. Because they used it twice the night that we were at the meeting at Branson. They said that you're on the hook once the application is...
I need to know about that.
Yeah, and that's the part that's bothering me, is that sure. You're on the hook as a county for the 25% monies if the application is applied for. And now I never have grasped around that, Jim, and I understand the letter of intent or
right.
Whatever.
This is stuff that she told us. So
Now, at the same time, though, I've also heard her say, with this being a voluntary program, it's my understanding that either the property owner or the county can back out of this thing was my understanding. Is since it is voluntary.
Right.
But it's an individual effort if the property owner takes on the 25%. If it's not, if it's a, it goes back to what you said earlier, if it's a combined effort, and you took it to be that way, didn't you, Bob? Then the county is, they're on the hook, if you want to say, if it's combined. But if the individuals themselves are behind the application, then it's not. Is that what you're trying to say with a letter of intent?
I'm not sure.
I know
And I'd understood the same thing, that they were requesting that each property owner sign a letter of intent agreeing that they were going to come up with the 25%. Now, and this is one thing I wanted to clarify with the city a little bit, and I wanted to make sure I hadn't misunderstood, but I knew that, and I wasn't positive how they came out. I know one of the questions was whether or not the city was going to pay for the appraisal, and
well, I understood that the first meeting, everything that's tacked on is tacked on to the 25% that is obligated to either the property owner or the public entity, and it's none of the 75% is involved. The 75% monies are out there for availability for them to collect. Everything, demolition, appraisal, even down to the title work. I thought that, when we talked about the transfer of title, that's all on the entity's shoulders.
Title insurance.
The cost, the title insurance, the whole shooting match is on the either the person or the public entity that's involved. And I'm pretty sure I didn't get that wrong that night because I had some question about it there.
I mean, I guess what I would say, Bob, is we've got more questions. And I need you to,
That was my...
We have BOE going on the rest of this month.
Okay.
We're going to ask you and Ron to press hard to get these answers so we can get this thing going, because I'm really concerned that us not having the same answer, I mean, asking the question three times and getting three different answers is not working here.
Exactly.
We got to have better answers so that we can get the final direction so that the homeowners know for sure. I mean, right now it seems like it's the non-substantial damaged homeowners are at risk.
Yes.
Of getting applied, and we don't have enough answers from SEMA so that we can make an intelligent decision. So you're going to have to press them to get those answers so that I would feel comfortable making a decision. And, you know, is it 45% damaged only? Is it 40% damaged only? But I would safely say if people are damaged 10% and want to be bought out, I'm not interested in that because that's going to, we won't be able to, it'll skew the entire group.
And I'd be willing to say of the people we've got, I don't really think anybody falls in the 10, 15, 20% range. Most of these folks, like I said, came out between, you know, our low end is 30-35%.
Let's establish a meeting for you and Ron to sit down with Sheila or whomever.
Okay.
Ask these specific questions so that we can have those answers.
Soon.
I would also like to take a look at the, or have you all take a hard look at this benefits cost analysis software.
Oh, exactly.
To see what all needs to be plugged into that and see if we can take some of the figures that we've got and actually utilize that and see where we're at. I mean, run a trial program.
I felt the same way.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And to give us some idea. But again, the possibility exists that we're only going to look at substantially damaged. But if, in fact, we can bring in some non-substantially damaged, then we're going to consider that.
Yeah.
And Ron,
but we have to know that we're going to be able to make the mark to salvage all of the substantially damaged homes.
And that will fall under the priorities of how you list them, because if you get down and you've got a house that's 48 and it may fall in, or 45 and it may fall in with the others, but you can't take one that's down 25 that...
Oh, exactly. I think maybe one of the key things, like I said, from my understanding... The thing that I think concerned me the most to do a tentative run on this benefit cost analysis, I think we're going to have at least a fairly realistic value on each of these properties, and I think that's been one of my primary concerns. I'm not positive how to approach that side of it.
First, we have to find out how many property owners are interested in the buyout. They
exactly.
have to make a decision. And once we have that in hand, then we can move forward on what we're going better.
Exactly.
Move forward on what we're going to do.
One thing I am going to ask too, and this question came up during the city's meeting. We've got a few of these folks that have had to conduct recent appraisals anyway, in order to get SBA loans.
Correct.
And so,
will those work?
That was going to be. And Branson had the same question. We were going to try to find out if some of these folks have had to have an appraisal for an SBA loan anyway. Can we just use that as the appraisal?
And I know that a couple houses down there recently did refinancing. How old an appraisal can it work? I mean, that's the question I've got, is how recent does it need to be? Because I know some of these individuals have bank appraisals that are on file at the banks. And so I think those could – I didn't know if those would work. I do have a question. We've got to wrap this up, Bob, because we got BOE that starts in 20 minutes, and we get to eat lunch here.
Okay.
The question I've got for you is, are we still getting people – on the fence saying, I am interested, I may not be interested, because would it be best for us to establish a deadline no matter what happens?
I think at some point I think we're going to have to, because I do have a percentage that I think are still kind of debating it.
Okay, we got to get past it. It's a moving target. It's hard to even start with this BCA
exactly.
if we don't know how many properties we're talking about. Is there a way you could work with Ron to get this Sheila meeting as fast as possible, and then come back to us?
Yes.
You know, if we have to do a conference call meeting or a commission meeting or whatever, just if we're not here physically. But I got to make sure this sense of urgency. We've got to get this thing moving.
Exactly.
And not having answers just slows down the process so bad. And, you know, every day we wait, a day longer that we're not in the queue to down the road here. So if you would work hard to get this meeting with Sheila, like Ron Hausman just suggested, I would strongly encourage that this gets done fast.
And let them take care of it.
Yeah,
just not be involved.
Get the answers and then come back to us and you say, my recommendation is this percent of non-substantial. Or you may come back and say, no non-substantial houses. You know.
Why don't we give them at least 2 weeks, which is the 25th?
Okay.
Will that be enough time?
I hope it's faster than that. I don't know why you couldn't get on the phone with Sheila today or tomorrow and come back to us on Wednesday.
Okay.
Or Thursday or Friday. So
that's going to be a phone call.
I don't want to be the reason for this thing to slow down.
Well, we're not going to slow down. We're going to make the application. We voted already to move forward with the grant application. The question there is the valuation that we're going to place on that application. Are there other questions on there that would you didn't mention any that would define how many properties were affected?
Looks like the biggest thing.
Okay,
like I said,
you had to identify at least how many properties were the notice of interest document you're talking about.
And I should have made multiple copies.
Well, that's fine. Just you can
find out what has to go on here. If we don't have to list number, we're in good shape.
It looks like it's primarily value, primarily. And my thought is, you know, we're going to have to come up with a project value, so it's going to have to be the approximate market value of these properties, the cost of appraisals, the cost of demolition.
No. If the proposed project is a flood buyout, attach a listing of properties with property owner's name, property address, estimated fair market value.
Yeah.
In other words, it says assessor's appraisal. Indication of owner-occupied or renter-occupied, indication officially declared substantially damaged.
You need to get on the phone with Sheila and get this thing going fast.
Oh, exactly.
And then maybe we establish a deadline.
Then you're going to get the number for all the substantially damaged and have that ready for us no matter what we do.
Yeah, we know that for sure.
Because I'm ready to move forward on the substantially damaged.
I am too.
Do we increase it to the others is the decision we have to make. But just as they just stated, we need all that information on values.
You already know the substantially damaged properties and their values and all that. So you already got most of the application. So, but as soon as you have it, you call Nikki and get on. We'll figure a way to get this information to us.
Okay.
Guys, we had one other thing scheduled following Bob, and I'm sorry, Bob. I'll come
back
to you.
We're going to have
to
post. We're going to have to.
4:30 today, or?
Well, we can postpone it to
What is
and
it?
See what it's
performance, non-performance contract?
But this is the recommendation. We've been working on that for 6 months. I would say postpone it to a later date.
We've got the information, I guess, from Ms. Redford. You'd rather...
Or is it going to be a presentation?
I don't know. I don't know. It would be. It would have been here by now.
She would have been here an hour ago.
Yeah.
What information do we...
Well, the question is, let's just come back. Let's just come back and post it.
I think that's best.
Let's just post it. All right, motion to adjourn for the day.
Second.
Ron, we're just going to come back, and we'll post it. Okay.
Motion has been moved to adjourn for the day. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion carries. I'm going to run upstairs and grab a cracker real quick and be back here for the 1 o'clock.